All right, so we are holding on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, about halfway down the Amud. Line begins Achoy. About just past the middle of the Amud. Okay, we started discussing yesterday about the issue that the signs that you have the Issur on Yayin Nesach, the signs that you have the Issur on wine of Goyim, you also have a certain Issur on beer of Goyim. And we started discussing the parameters of that. That's basically when you're drinking in a place which is kavua to drink together with Goyim, for example, at a bar. The Rambam also says more generally, if you have a party which is majority Goyim, then you have the same issue. But on the other hand, for example, Tosfos talks about over here, if let's say you visit a goy at home, let's say, and he offers you a beer, mm-hmm. or even you're staying by him overnight, let's say, then it's allowed. So besides the fact that it's only a one-time thing, it's not an ongoing thing. There's also again the issue of Ava. Clemens is vinegar. But we're not talking about beer. Because when here we're talking about vinegar. We talked before about vinegar. No. Now we're talking about beer.
Beer is not in
a Mishnah. It's not. That's what Tosfos said. We said yesterday that Tosfos says there's nothing about it in a Mishnah, nothing about it in a Braisa. Apparently, it may be something that they asked it in the times of Amoraim. And therefore, it's not in a Mishnah or a Braisa. Some of the Rishonim learned, in fact, that it may not have started out as an Issur of the Chachamim in the first place. It may have been that people started being Noyig as an Issur in it, and eventually it developed the force of Halacha. But that's why we're saying, that's why we're more lenient with it than with most other things. With
Yain. What kind of Al-Tosef Al-Tigra?
That's Minhagim. It's to say that it's a Din D'Oraisa that you're not allowed to do. You're allowed to accept Minhagim. Where have you ever heard of that?
Are we saying it's a Minhag?
We're saying, according to that way of looking at it, that it started out as a Minhag, but it developed the force of halacha. It's not the only thing. You have a number of things like that where the Gemara mentions that people were noyig and issur to do such and such, and eventually it developed the force of halacha in the sense that it becomes, the Jewish people have accepted it collectively, and therefore it becomes also or mutter, or required, as the case may be. One example being tefillos arvus. Technically, tefillos arvus is shuras. Technically, you're not required to daven ma'ariv, but the whole Jewish people have accepted it as an obligation.
Now
it becomes an obligation. Yeah.
Well, so when do you...
Since the Gemara is discussing over here the parameters of it, then obviously that means they consider it to be a valid minhag and something that needs to be kept. So therefore, yeah. All right. So onward on this discussion about beer. Rav Shmuel bar Bisna Ikla Margvan. Rav Shmuel bar Bisna one time visited Margvan, is the name of a place. Isolei Chamra v'la Ishti, they offered him wine and he didn't drink it. Isolei Shichra v'la Ishti, and then they offered him beer and he also didn't drink it. Rashi learns, and most of the other Rishonim do as well, that these people in Maugavon who offered him these drinks are actually Jews. The problem is, they were Jews who are not careful on the matter of Yayin Nesach, of not drinking wine of Goyim. So therefore, he wouldn't drink their wine, and therefore, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, for that reason, he wouldn't drink their beer either. The Ritva wants to say that maybe they were actually Goyim, but the majority of Rishonim understand, like Rashi, that they were Jews. So the question is, Vishlema Chamra, I can understand why he wouldn't drink their wine. Mishum Shimsa, because of the Shemetz, because of the Chashad, of the suspicion of Yayin Nesach. The point is, again, if we go with Rashi, that these were Jews who are Chashud, then therefore you have, okay, we can understand. He's not drinking their wine because they're suspect that their wine may have been touched by God. Yeah, that's a Chashad. Rashi says, Shimsa means Chashad. Shichra mishum mai, but why should he not drink their beer? The answer is mishum shimsa de shimsa. Yes, but you have, it's a chashad of a chashad. It's basically a gzera. He's not drinking their wine. It's not a gzera on a gzera. Wine itself is osur, to a certain extent, daraisa. And therefore, he wouldn't drink their beer because of the concern, because if you come to drink their beer, people are going to think that maybe you're allowed to drink their wine as well. And he wanted to make it absolutely clear that their wine is off-limits, and therefore even anything that might make us think of their wine, such as their beer, is also off-limits.
So you can go indefinitely?
So therefore, no, not indefinitely. He's not going to, no, because you don't.
You don't.
He didn't, though, because you have people may think that beer and wine are too similar. People aren't going to think other drinks are similar to beer, which in turn are similar to wine.
Similar to beer.
Liquor would be, yeah. I don't know, if they didn't know from liquor, if they did, then maybe it would be different. Liquor is basically the same thing as beer in that regard. It's an alcoholic drink that's not wine. So fine, so you wouldn't drink any alcoholic drinks today, isn't it? Okay. Onward. Omer Rav, Hai Shichra Da'arma Shari, beer from Goyim is mutter, technically, as we said before. I mean, we said before that it's osur under certain conditions. Da'arma means Goyim, yeah. So, in principle, it is mutter. However, v'chia brila nishimenei. However, Rav says, my son Chia should not drink from it. The question is, why not? So either way you look at it. E shori, if it's mutter, l'kula alma shori, then it should be mutter to everybody, including Chia. E osir, l'kula alma osir, and if it's osir, it's osir to everybody. Ella, no, the answer is, what it is like this. Rav's, we discussed at the beginning of the Sugya yesterday, why is it that Bir of Goyim, under certain circumstances, should be Osir or Mutter? We said that one reason is because of chasnus, because it leads to inappropriate closeness with Goyim, which
always
could lead to intermarriage.
Always the Osir.
No, but then as we discussed yesterday, what the Ram says, but the Ram has a couple of explanations about it, one of them being that he, first of all, the Ram's first explanation is actually it's not only beer, other things as well that are also mishum chasnus is only also under conditions that it can lead to chasnus. The Ram himself says he doesn't particularly like that answer, but he offers that. And other later on, Acharonim also say it's not really logical to accept that. His second answer is to accept this idea that anything that's also mishum chasnus is only under certain conditions. No, when we say, for example, pasakum, let's say, or later on in the parak, we're going to talk about at one point oil of goyim was also, et cetera, all these things that are also mishum chasnus, when they're also outright. So why is beer different? So the Ram says a second reason, which is because number one, bread is a staple food. Everybody has to eat it. Beer, you don't have to. So therefore, you're much more likely to come close with the goyim eating their bread.
It depends by which country. In Germany, beer is like a national drink.
That's not the point, whether it's a national drink or not. But the point is that it's not an absolute requirement. People need bread. People don't need beer. And then also he points out, bread is usually made by women, and therefore there's more of a problem. You're going to get close with the goyish of women, and that's going to lead to chasnus. As opposed to beer is not such an issue. Anyway, that's one reason we said is because of chasnus. The other reason we said is because the goyim are not careful about gilui. They're not careful about leaving liquids uncovered. And we said, in particular, we're not worried about the beer itself. Snakes don't drink beer. They're not going to inject venom into it. But we said they may leave the wine, they may leave the water, rather, uncovered that eventually they're going to mix into the beer, and that a snake could drink from and inject venom into. So Rav is saying that beer of goyim is mutter. However, chia, my son, shouldn't drink from it. So why is that? Ella, Rav sava mishum giluya. What it is Rav holds the problem is gilui. The problem is that goyim leave the water uncovered. However, the thing is with beer, Rav figures there's not a problem. But also meroira de kishusa, because the bitterness of the kshus, which is the hops that they put into the beer, that causes the koli le zihare, it causes the effect of the venom to weaken. It reacts chemically, the hops or whatever it is. Chemically.
What hops? Hops. I thought it was a cucumber. The kishus,
no? No, that's kishus for the cough. This is kishus for the cough. Yeah. Kishus for the cough is hops, which is a plant that they put into beer. It gives it the bitter flavor, like. Anyway, the point is the bitterness of it reacts chemically with the venom, even if there is snake venom in there, and therefore it weakens it, so therefore it won't kill a person. All it will do, udalaki malculate face, however, somebody who's already sick, that even that weakened venom will make them sicker, so a healthy person it won't affect, a sick person it will. Well, the chia bri, hayovalaki, so Rav is saying, since my son chia is weak, therefore, he shouldn't drink such beer of goyim on the off chance that there might be venom in it, which would make him even weaker. As opposed to a regular person who's not sick, gazunta hate, let him drink it. Even if there's venom in there, the hops. What did he have?
Suffering from.
We don't know. We don't know. But whatever it is, he was weak. Could be. The Gemara mentions in a few places that some of the chachamim in general often were weak and sick because they spent all their time learning and that weakened their physical strength. So maybe it could have just been that. Anyway, more on this, on Gilui. Amar Shmuel, kol ashrotim yesh lahen heres. Shmuel says all kinds of creeping creatures have venom. It's not just snakes that we're worried about. The difference is, shal nachash memes, shal shrotim enim memes. The difference is, venom of a snake can actually kill. Venom of other kinds of crawling creatures or whatever, it can injure you, it can make you sick or whatever, but it wouldn't kill you.
Some do.
Okay, well, we're not talking about the kind, they didn't live in Australia. I understand. They didn't live in Australia. They didn't have the poisonous spiders and the various other kinds of poisonous creatures.
They lived in Israel.
They lived in Israel. So
there's scorpions.
But fine. Okay. But
why scorpions?
Okay, because scorpions usually live in dry areas. They're not going to usually come and drink and take a drink from water. The point is that the point is any kind of shrubbin that you're afraid are going to drink from water, some of them also have some kind of venom. Some of them also have some kind of thing. But at most, you'd get sick.
For sure they have in Israel.
All right. Amale Shmuel l'chia barav. So now Shmuel says to the same chia barav that we had before. He says Bar Arya, meaning son of a lion, meaning that your father was a lion, a great powerful person in Torah. It could also be Bar Uriah, son of a Tamar Chacham, whatever. Tova Emeloch Milsa Mali said to have a Omer Rabbah book. Come, let me tell you a nice verse that your father Rav used to say. Rav passed away 7 years before Shmuel, so there were things that Shmuel knew that he hadn't necessarily had a chance to teach Chia. He says, Hachi Omer Abuch, Shmuel says, this is what your father said. Hani Armoi Zukani, these goyim who look swollen up, where the zukani literally means they're like bags, they're like skin bags full of air, like balloons kind of. Why do they balloon up? The reason is Avashos of Giluya Velay Mesu. The reason is because they drank water or other liquids that were left uncovered. So why didn't they die? I did Achli Shkotim or Amosim because they eat creepy, crawly creatures, because they these kinds of things, Chover Gofaihu, it heats up their body, and therefore that extra heat in their body, that different body chemistry of theirs breaks down the snake. Breaks down the snake venom such that it won't kill them. It will weaken them, and it'll make them swell up. But therefore, so when you see a goy swollen like that, then you know that's what must have happened. So that's when we talked a couple of days ago in the Gemara that goyim are not as careful about gilui. Here we see a reason why, because the worst it'll do is it'll make them sick. Fine, you know, you could get sick in those days from any of a lot of things. They wouldn't worry too much about that. It would make them swell up. That's all fine. Yeah. All right. Now getting back to Yayin Nesach, yet again. Omer of Yosef, Hai Chala de Shichra Dharma. Now, so we talked before, but we were just talking about whether beer of Goyim is mutter, and we said, in principle, it's mutter. However, we said there are rules about it. There is the issue to be careful about jewelry if you're weak, as Rav is saying. And there's also the issue of chasnus, according to the other opinion, which is accepted by halacha. And therefore, again, you can't drink it in the bar, you can't drink it in the party or whatever, but you can have, you can drink it individually if it's offered to you or whatever. However, hai chala de shichra d'arma, however, vinegar that's made from beer of goyim, you could have the vinegar there, the beer could also ferment into vinegar. It could also spoil and become vinegar. That kind is oster. Beer, yeah, can turn into vinegar, yeah. Anything that has sugar in it can turn. Yeah. Okay. So such vinegar that came from beer of goyim is osur. Why is that? Because they mix into it lees, dregs from yayin nesach in order to improve it. So therefore, we have a real problem of yayin nesach.
But it was date beer.
It was date. Yeah.
It wasn't
right.
Our barley.
That's true. So it might have been different. Yeah, it's possible.
Properties.
And Tosfos points out on that basis, you actually have to be careful. For example,
is the dregs
from the bottom of the barrel of Yayin Nesach. Like they'd put that into beer to improve it. And Tosfos mentions on that basis, we talk have to be careful with beer. Yeah, because again, if the wine was actually used for nisuch, if it was actually used to pour in honor of a geshke, then yes, it would be also daraita. If it was just sam yenim, it was wine of goyim where we don't know what they did with it, then it would be also drabanim. Again, either because of a gzera, because they may have done nisuch with it, or because of chasnus. Either way, it would be also, yeah. And Tosfos says, therefore, yeah, you have to be careful with, for example, Tosfos says mead of goyim, which is a honey, which is a liquor made out of honey, where they often put dregs of wine into it, then you have a problem with it. And you have the general kind of thing that we talked about yesterday, which is it depends really.
What's the mead of honey?
Mead is a liquor made out of honey. The point is that sometimes they put dregs into it in Tosfos' time. Basically, it comes down to the usual thing that we talked about before, which we'll talk about later in the parak again, whether wine is more or less expensive than the other ingredients. If it's more expensive, we don't suspect that they're going to put wine or dregs or whatever in, because they're not going to.
Dregs is never expensive.
It's sometimes it may be, but whatever. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. However, Amar Rav Ashi, Yuma Oitzer Shori. Rav Ashi says, though, if they're bringing this vinegar that used to be beer, if they're bringing it, you're not allowed to drink it, let's say, right there in the store or whatever, where they're selling it. However, if they're bringing it from the storehouse, from someplace where they were keeping it long-term, then it is shori, then it's mutter. Kivin dema arvi may misra sori, because if they leave dregs of wine in it for too long, then it'll spoil, it'll get ruined altogether. They would only do this kind of thing, to put dregs in it to improve it, only short-term. So if you're getting it directly from the store, for example, then it would be also. But if it came from something long term, then it would be mutter.
The warehouse,
exactly right. And Tosfos says on that basis, so therefore, so we'd be allowed to buy other kinds of alcoholic drinks from goyim as long as you see because again, you're buying them from long term storage. And Tosfos says actually, even if even if those drinks are more expensive than wine, where wouldn't we have a chash, therefore, that they're putting in wine in, because wine is cheaper, and therefore they can get more volume? But no, because again, if they put in wine and they store it long term, then it'll spoil. So wherever you have some kind of something like that, so not. So if you don't see him actually taking it out of the barrel, then it depends whether it's more expensive or not, because he may have mixed wine in it right before he served it to you. But if it's something that's kept long term, then based on what the Gemara and wine would spoil it, if it's put in it long term, then as all Gemara is saying, it's mutter. So he's not gonna allow it to spoil. All right, now we continue with the next part of the Mishnah. So we started talking in the Mishnah about Yayin Netzach, and then the Mishnah continued with V'cheres Hadrayoni. The next kind of thing of Goyim that is Osir Bahana is earthenware of Hadrayoni. So my Hadrayoni, what does that mean, Hadrayoni? Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel Cheres Shal Hadrayonis Keser. It means the kind of earthenware that was used or was invented by Hadrayonis Keser, the famous Rosho who put down the revolt of Ben Kuziva and killed hundreds of thousands of Jews and so on and so forth. He or his people, or whatever, invented this kind of earthenware that they would take along. What? It is Hadrian, yeah. This kind of earthenware that his soldiers would take along with them. What is it? He also Rav Dimi Yomer, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he explained, here's the details. Kaukab Sulahaya, they started with virgin soil that had never been worked, so that way it has as much strength to grow things as possible. Nothing had ever been cultivated there before, so therefore it has its full strength, all its minerals, all its whatever. Nobody had ever worked this land, planted it or whatever. Avda v'nata, so they would work this land, they'd plow it, whatever, they'd plant it with grapevines. So therefore it made a very high quality wine, a very strong kind of wine. Then they would take this, the resulting wine, they would put it into white containers. White, it actually says, means that they're new. So this way they'll absorb as much of the wine as possible. So therefore it would absorb, the earthenware would absorb as much of the wine as possible. So according to the Gemara, the way the Gemara is saying it over here, it sounds like it was baked. But the Rambam seems to understand that they would actually mix the wine with the clay before it was baked and then bake it. So maybe he had a different girsa in the Gemara.
How could he absorb if it was...
Because the earthenware absorbs a lot. That's what we're going to discuss in the next couple of blocks. We're going to discuss it. So therefore, so it would absorb a lot of the wine. Then they would break these jugs, these earthenware containers into pieces, the daru bahadayu, and carry those pieces along with them. And that way they have portable wine. Wherever they would stay, wherever they would stop, wherever they were going to set up camp or whatever, they would soak these earthenware shards in water, the shasu, and then they would have wine to drink. So it was like concentrated wine. And Amar Rabbi Shurban Levi, and Rabbi Shurban Levi says, you should know, with such good quality wine, v'rishen shalonu kishlishi shalahen. So like this, they could take these earthenware shards and soak them over and over to get out more and more wine. Each time they'd get more wine out of it that would get mixed in with the water that they soaked them into. The third time they'd do that would be as good quality as our normal first wine. That's how powerful this wine was. But even the third time already, they're still getting something good out of it, comparable to what we drink. Yeah.
I guess
he could have a goy, taste it, yeah. Or Ger, for that matter. We could ask Ger if you had Cheres Hadrayoni when you were a goy. Okay. So that's what Cheres Hadrayoni is, and that's why it's also Bana. Because of all the wine that's mixed into it. The Meiri, I think, says that actually in that sense it becomes it's like as if it wasn't earthenware anymore. It's as if it was like frozen or congealed or whatever wine, where therefore it's still wine. It's still awesome.
Oh, some kind of congealed.
No, it wasn't really congealed. I mean, that's where, again, according to the Rambam, they actually, it was absorbed. But according to the Rambam, they actually mixed in the wine when they were making the clay instead of mixing in water as usually would. You'd mix in wine, but whatever.
If they actually fired, if they couldn't elevate the temperature more.
They'd have to fire it at a low temperature, I guess. I don't know. Okay.
The alcohol evaporates at a very low temperature.
Okay, so they'd fire it at a low temperature. I don't know. Okay. All right. So now we have a question. Fine. So we're saying that Cheres Hadrayoni is also Bahana because of the wine in it. What about if you don't need, what about if you want to use it as earthenware? You're not interested in using it for wine at all. Would you be allowed to take a shard of the Cheres Hadrayoni and use it to hold up a leg of a bed, for example? You're not using it for the wine.
It's going to be used for the
dessert. It's not for dessert. It's not the problem. The problem is Yayin Netzach. But that's the thing. Fine. But you're not using it as Yayin Netzach. The basic question is, the basic question is, you want that, you want that the Yayin Nesach, which is inside the earthenware, should continue to exist. However, you don't care about the wine itself. You're not going to be using the wine. It's al yedei davar acher. You want it to exist for a different purpose so that you can use this piece of earthenware to hold up the leg of your bed. Is that shari or osur? Is such a thing mutter or is it osur? Now, later on in the Masechta, when we get into more of the details of Yayin Nesach and the Samach, we're going to talk about there are many dinim that come out from this kind of thing called Reus Bikiyuma. You have various kinds of situations over there where a Jew has an interest in a barrel of Yayin Nesach continuing to exist. For example, you're doing work carrying them, let's say, or whatever, different things like that, where therefore that creates problems in halacha as far as him getting paid for it, for example, or whatever, because it has to be. Not only you're not allowed to have hanah from Yayin Nesach, but you're not allowed to be Reus Bikiyuma. It's not allowed to be that you're in a situation where you have an interest in that Yayin Nesach continuing to exist. So that's the question over here. Here, that would be where you want the Yayin Nesach itself to exist. For example, again, you have a barrel of it where it's in your interest that it stays intact until you deliver it where it's supposed to go. Here, you don't care about the Yayin Nesach. It would be the same if it was a regular piece of earthenware. But the fact of the matter is, it is soaked through with Yayin Nesach. What's the din? Toshma, come, we'll prove, we actually have a machlokes amaroyim about that between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Chad also v'chad shori. One says it's also, one says it's mutter. The Hilchus HaKamanda also, the Halacha is like the one who says it's Osir. This is in parenthesis over here because the Rosh, for example, is not Gerdes it. But if we accept it, then that's it. It means it's Osir. And then Tosfos discusses that, it means exactly that. Tosfos, in fact, points out for the same reason, by the way, that would come up also in the Halacha of Pesach, for example. If you have a Keli that has absorbed Chometz, and let's say you're not planning to cook with it over Pesach, but you want to use it, let's say, for storage or whatever, you have the same issue. You want the keli to be around, not sold to the goy or whatever, so that you can use it, even though there's chametz embedded in it. You're not using it for food, but based on if we're saying over here, that's also in the case of Yayin Nesach, then it would also be in that case also.
So you're also talking about a pot that's holding up your bed, for instance?
Yes, let's say, for example, you're using it to store pens or whatever, yeah. Yeah, so is it the store pens or whatever? Yeah, so it would be also by the same logic. Okay. Meister, the Gemara says, okay, but I have a contradiction. If you're saying that you're saying that it's also, a Braisa says like this. Before we get into the Braisa, actually, Tosfos points out what about we had in the Mishnah. We had a case involving skin bags of goyim and barrels of goyim with Jewish wine in them. We said that the Reb Meir said they're also b'hana. That's also related to Yom Yaidavacha. Because you have to, on the face of it, you're not interested in the wine that's absorbed in the barrels. You're interested in the wine. The Tosfos discusses. Now we learned the other day when we learned the Mishnah that Rashi talks about that the question is your Jewish wine that you put in those barrels osur or not? Has become osur from the amount of goyish wine from the size of the barrels that came out and then got mixed in with your wine. Tosfos over here learns that no. The issue in the Mishnah, rather, is the question. Rashi says that we're talking about the barrels, and the barrels themselves, in which case, how does that fit with our Gemara? Tosfos says the question over there is rather about the wine. Your Jewish wine, does it become osur from what it absorbed from the goyish barrel? Here, we're talking about the barrel itself, so it's not really, you can't really bring in our Mishnah, because our Mishnah doesn't directly have to do with it.
But still, we're saying that
No, because the difference is, in the case of the Mishnah, it's not, the question isn't roitz b'kiyum yayidei davar acher. The question is, rather, what's the din about the wine in the barrels? Is it also b'hanah or not? Here we're dealing with the question, are the barrels themselves mutter? So it's a completely different thing. Okay, so Meister, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, hadardurim. Dardurim, Rashi says, means small bottles. The Aruch says it means wooden barrels, as opposed to nowadays barrels are usually made out of wood. In the times of the Gemara, as we know throughout Shas, they were made out of earthenware, but they had such things as wooden barrels as well. And the Aruch says that's called dardurim. Anyway, Rashi says it means small bottles. Baharuk voice, or skin bags, shalovdikachavim, that belong to goyim, that had wine in them. Yayin shayisro konusben, if you have now Jewish wine stored in them. Also b'shtir mutter b'hana, you're not allowed to drink that wine, but it is mutter b'hana. Continues the Braita, Hayat Shimon ben Gudah lefnei bnei Shoram Gamliel. Shimon ben Gudah, that was his name, gave Eidos, testified in front of Ram Gamliel, in front of the son of Ram Gamliel, rather, in front of the son of Ram Gamliel, al Ram Gamliel, sheshasim ben Akoy, that Ram Gamliel himself drank from such a container in Akoy, where there was Jewish wine in a Dardur or Rukva that had previously belonged to Goyim. V'loy hoidu loy, and the other Chachamim did not agree with Shimon ben Gouda that this is correct.
They said it's
usher. They held it's usher. They said, very nice, you gave that Eidus, but you must have misunderstood what happened. Apparently. He lived in the time of the Tanna, amen. Continues the Braith, and no dose shall over the Chachamim. What about no dose of Goyim? Now the difference is, by the way, a chemes and a noid are both made out of leather, both made out of skin. The difference is a noid is some of the Rishonim say they're actually the same thing, but many of the Rishonim say they're different. A noid is smaller. A chemes is made out of harder leather. It's meant for long term storage, as opposed to a noid would be for short term storage. Okay, so before we were talking about
chemes,
we have both. We have chemes mayim by Yishmael, and we have noid also.
Yeah.
Where do we have it in the Torah? I don't remember. Well, in Tilden we have Sima Dimasi Binodacha. Dimasi, put my tears. Hashem in my David Amalfa Hashem, put my tears in your
noid.
No, but they're selling like Kaviyachal, like you have a bottle where you store the tears of people who are.
And we use this special to explain the word not.
It would not.
That's
not the only place. You also have a Noda Cholov by Sisra and Yo, whatever. You have the word Noda that you see when they were in Tanakh. What?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So Noid and Achemus, again, some of the Rishonim say they're the same thing, two different names for the same thing. Some of them say that rather a Noid is meant for short-term storage and it's made out of softer leather, and Achemus is meant for longer term for traveling or whatever, and it's made out of harder leather. All right, so anyway, Noidus Shalovi Kachavim. No dose of goyim that had wine in them. Reb Shimon Gamliel over Meshum Reb Yeshua ben Chusoy. Also, lastest man shtichim lachamur. You are not allowed. Now you notice Reb Shimon Gamliel is the son of Reb Gamliel. So later on, the Gemara is going to figure out what exactly happened over here. But anyway, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying that you're not even allowed to take such a noid and use it as a saddle for a donkey, a saddle blanket like for a donkey.
You don't care about the wine.
Exactly. So that's the question. Now here we're talking about something where you want the wine to exist, but not for itself. You're only interested in using it as a piece of leather that you can use for a saddle blanket for the donkey. Vikartoni also. And yet the Braitha is saying it's also. So what are you telling me? Between Rabbi Lazar and Rabbi Yechanan, what are you telling me? One of your opinions is that it's Moser when you have a Braitha saying it's also. And again, that's why Joseph says you can't use the Mishnah, because the Mishnah was talking about the question of the wine inside them. Here we're dealing about the noid itself. Okay, so the Gemara answers back, Belitai Meich. Okay, well, according to your own Svara, you should argue, Kan Kanim Shal Ovi Kachavim Litzeru, L'Mizvan, then by your same logic, you should argue that Kan Kanim, which are also barrels of Goyim, that had Yain Nesach in them at one point, should also be also to sell. And after all, we see that's not so. There's no problem selling those actual kankanim themselves. You can't use them for your own wine, but you could use them for storage, for example, and you could sell them or whatever. What's the difference? Obviously, it can't be necessarily just a problem with roitz of the kiyum, right? So you have to ask, maishna noidus or maishna kankanim? So after all, you have to ask for yourself, so why would there be a difference between a noid and a kankan? Why would Rav Shimon Gamliel be saying that one is osir and one is mutter? The answer is, Omar Rava. So Rava says no. The difference is like this. It's not actually an issue in the case of the noid of roitz b'kiyumei idea d'avachol. The reason why the noid is also is a special case. Gzeira shem yibokan noid. We make gzeira because the noid might. You're a Jew. You have a noid of kosher wine. Your noid might split open because it's made out of leather after all. It could break. Now you're traveling. You have what's the newest piece of leather available? The piece of leather that you're using as your donkey saddle blanket. You're gonna take it and cut out a piece of it and use it to patch the hole. Well, now you have a real problem because now you have a piece of leather that used to be part of a goyish of wine bottle that contained goyish of wine and that was used for a while there as a saddle blanket or whatever. Now you're taking. What do you mean? How do you know? Because you said that you're not allowed to use it as a saddle blanket. So that, in other words, the point is, that, and therefore, there you have a real issue, because now you have your bag of wine now contains a piece that came from a goyish bag of wine, which contains Yain Nesach.
So
I'm just going to
say that about everything.
No, so therefore, that, so in other words, that is why Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, specifically, you're not allowed to make it a shetiach. A shtich in machamer. You're not allowed to make it a blanket on top of a donkey. You would, in principle, even according to Shimon Gamliel, be allowed to use it for other kinds of things. You could use it, for example, so which was, in other words, again, when we said that and we had an opinion, we had between Rav Elazar and Rav Yochanan, one of them holding its mutter, not necessarily can you contradict them from this braisa, because even Rav Shimon Gamliel might hold its mutter for other purposes. Just not where there is a chance where it's going to end up being used to patch up a bag of wine.
A saddle.
For example, you use it for your saddle, and therefore you're on the road, and you have nothing else. But other cases, yeah. For example, to use it for other purposes, that might be mutter. For example, for to store other things. Tosfos says, for example, let's say to sell to goyim that they can use for their wine. Mm-hmm. So yeah, actually, Tosfos says that not because then it's not roots of the kiyumah idea of acher. Then you want it to exist because no, never mind. No, the problem there is because the goy is going to be putting wine in it. You have an interest in selling him something that contains yain netzach because that way it'll improve the taste of his new wine. But we're talking about other kinds of things. Yeah, let's see, you're going
to
use it
to make him improve the taste.
No, whatever it is, the point is it's sort of hayayin. You can't call it idea of acha. Idea of acha is you're using it to hold up your bed, using it for a saddle or whatever. This wouldn't be the third. Kiyur ba'alma is when you talk about kiyur ba'alma. You don't do that with wine.
The wine that's inside the...
No. It's still...
Cold
Yeah, no, I mean, we're going to have... No, later on, we're going to have on Lamed Gimel, we're going to talk about, because wine is kept in these kinds of things only, and cold, therefore it absorbs differently than hot things do, therefore you don't need the same kind of kashering process that you do for things that we use with hot food. But nevertheless, you can't say it's cure balm, it's some kind of, like, off taste or whatever. No, it's got an actual flavor to it, yeah. It's got an actual mamoshes sometimes even, especially, yeah. Okay, so therefore...
Today, we're not allowed to drink out of these nerdos. I mean, these...
Well, that would be the idea, yeah. Bags. Yeah, because they were used for storing Goyish wine. Now, we will see later on
today,
again...
Today, they don't use for the young nerdos.
Again, we have to ask the question, what exactly... They don't do nisuch nowadays, but first of all, you still have the issue of chasnus. Second of all...
Just talking about
okay. Fine. If they do netzach, then it's still also daraisa. But even if not, wine of goyim is still also derabanan again, because you have the issue of chasnus, and even if you don't have the issue of nisuch, because of that, I mentioned at the beginning when we started talking about these dinim a couple of days ago, when we started with the Mishnah and Chafetz, I mentioned that Rashi brings later in the Masechta and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch that nowadays yeshayimrim that wine of goyim is not also bahana because they're not. Prone to nisuch. The problem is only the noseim. The problem is only chasnus, and therefore for that, that's not reason enough to make it also bahana. So
you can't.
Meaning, in principle, you could. Well, again, to make a regular thing of buying and selling it, that not because you have a din that anything that's also to eat, you're not allowed to make a regular business. You're not allowed to open, let's say, a unit. You wouldn't be allowed to open a McDonald's, let's say, for example, a tray for McDonald's and sell, even though tray for meat is not also bahana. But you're not allowed to make a business of selling it. But if you have one time you happen to have some goyish of wine and you want to give it or sell it or whatever to some other goy, then yeah, according to that opinion, it would be mutter. It would be mutter to do. It wouldn't be also bana. So Aruch mentions that. And practically speaking, and then, you know, in the olden days, in the Middle Ages, yeah, very often the goyim would pay off their debts with wine. Then because of that they were makel on it. Okay. Interesting, by the way, it's worth pointing out, you know, throughout this Masechta, we're going to have later on, again, when we get into the Nuns and the Samas, Tosfos talks a lot. Tosfos has some very, very long Tosfos to deal with these dinim, to deal with these various dinim, because so much of the economy in those days, especially in France, which is where most of the Baalei Tosfos live, was dependent on wine. So practically speaking, they need to work out what exactly are the halachas of a year, what is osir, what is mutter. All right. Onward. So the question is, okay, fine. So that explains the answer according to the opinion in the Machlokas before about the Cheres Hadrayani, where you want to use it for supporting a bed. Fine. So they're not contradicted by this Braisa, because this Braisa is just saying in the case of a skin bag, in the case of a node, you have a specific reason not to use it as a saddle blanket, because you might end up using it to patch your own bag. But other than that, it wouldn't be awesome. Fine. What about Olivando Amarot, the Kiyuma Ajay Dava Acha author? Fine. What about according to the opinion? That said before, that in the case of the Cheres Hadrayoni, it would be Osir. Then you've got to ask, Maishna Kankanim Deshoru. Then why is it that barrels previously belonging to Goyim are Mutter, whereas the Cheres Hadrayoni is not?
It's the same.
On the face of it, it should be the same. The answer is it's not. The answer, exactly. Amalach, the answer is, he can tell you, Hasam Lefteli Isur Be'ene, because with regular barrels of Goyim, you don't have an Isur Be'ene. You don't have a visible Isur over there. You have, it's embedded in the walls of it. The Hadrianic onion, yeah.
You could see the wine?
Yeah, you can see all the Italy sort of ale. You have the very fact that you can soak it in water and wine starts coming out shows that you have much more of a mamushers of wine over there than in the case of a regular run-of-the-mill barrel, where all you have is a taste that's embedded in the walls, and therefore it's gonna get absorbed into your wine that you put in there. Going back to the Braise, so we said Veloy Hoduloy, we said that Shimon ben Guda gave Eidos, that Ram Gamliel one time drank from such a container in Akari. And we said Veloy Hoduloy, the other Chachamim did not agree with him. So Gemara says, Ramini, I have a contradiction. What do you mean they didn't agree with him? A Braise says, Yayin habob rukbois shal over the Chachamim, wine that's brought in rukbois, again, which is a chemes, a skin bag, belonging to Goyim, also the shio mutabana, is also to drink, because it will have absorbed wine from their containers, but it is mutabana, because the amount that it absorbed is not enough to make it osabana. However, hayed Shimon ben Guda lifnei b'nei shodram gamliel, but Shimon ben Guda, and you notice here it's with an ayin before it's with an aleph, which we'll see soon, the significance of that, he gave edus lifnei b'nei shodram gamliel before the son of Ram Gamliel, al Ram Gamliel, shashasim men of Akar, that Ram Gamliel drank from such a container in Akar, meaning it's not only also to, not only it's mutzah b'hana, but it's actually mutzah to drink. V'hoiduloi, and the other chachamim agreed with him. V'hoiduloi, right.
So they did agree with him.
So why, what are we saying before they didn't? The answer is, my loy hoiduloi, deka amahasam kol sayasoi. Fine, when we said in the first braisa that they didn't agree with him, means most of the chachamim there didn't agree with him. But Ram Gamliel's son did agree that this is what my father did, and therefore I can accept that. The other Chachamim disagreed with that. Another possibility, there's a difference. First there was Shimon ben Guda with an aleph. He gave Eidos, and the Chachamim didn't accept it. Then when Shimon ben Guda with an ayin came and said the same thing, the Chachamim said, you know what, we have two people saying it already. There's got to be more to it. We have to accept that this is what Ram Gamliel did. Tosfos gets into a little bit of discussion over here, by the way. We just said before that Rav Shimon Gamliel, who was the son of Ram Gamliel, said that you're not allowed to even use these things for a saddle blanket. What are you talking about? What are you talking about drinking from them? So Tosfos says, first of all, I mean, he could be quoting...
That's the obvious question.
Yeah, so Tosfos says, first of all, he could be quoting what Rav Yeshua ben Kursai says, and that doesn't mean he agrees with it. Also, Tosfos says there's more than one Ram Gamliel, and there's more than one son of Ram Gamliel. Hold on. The Ram Gamliel over here, usually when Ram Gamliel is mentioned unspecified, it usually means Ram Gamliel the Yavne, the second Ram Gamliel, the grandfather of Rebbe. Fine, but Ram Gamliel didn't have only one son. He had a son, Rav Shimon Gamliel, but he also had another son, Rav Chanina ben Gamliel, who's mentioned in a number of places. So therefore, when we say that B'nai agreed, doesn't have to mean Rav Shimon Gamliel. It could mean Rav Chanina ben Gamliel agreed that this is what his father did. And Rav Shimon Gamliel continued to disagree and quoted Rabbi Yeshua ben Kursai as saying, not only you're not allowed to drink from it, but you're not even allowed to use it as a saddle blanket.
Son of Rabbi Gamliel contradicts his father.
Okay, you're saying my father drank from it. Okay, but I learned from Rabbi Yeshua ben Kursai that not, and therefore I'm going to follow what my Rebbe said. Maybe in Ram Gamliel's case, he had a particular reason. Where maybe in his case, he had a particular reason. Why.
He did drink out of it. And on what grounds did he drink out of it?
This question still has to be asked because it absorbed. But one idea is that we're going to discuss later on in the Gemara. It depends how long term the Goyish wine was stored in there. If it was just stored in there short term, it didn't really absorb anything. Therefore, you don't have such an issue. All you need to do maybe is rinse it out and put kosher wine in it, and you're good. As opposed to if it was stored in there long term, we're going to learn later on Lama Gimel, you have to kasher it. So therefore, no. So in this case, Ram Gamliel apparently knew that it only been, that's annoyed, it's not used for long-term storage.
90% is short-term, you still have 10% maybe longer.
But Ram Gamliel apparently checked into it, obviously. So you have different opinions among the Rishonim how much is needed for long-term. Yeshayim 24 hours, Yeshayim 3 days. I think there is also an opinion 12 months, but I don't remember for sure.
I think so.
Okay.
Any
kind of wine. Wine is wine. Onward. The Mishnah had said, "V'odus levukin."
Sweet wine is thicker than dry wine.
Okay, that's
so it would be absorbed less.
Maybe
dry
maybe.
Wine
no.
was more.
Could be. I don't know. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah, "V'odus levukin." We said that skins of animals that are levukin, that have a hole in them where the heart was, are also because we said then they cut out the heart and offer it to Avodah Zarah. Bottom, we learn in a braisa, ezehu or lovu. What is the definition of a hole? What do we mean that it has a hole in the heart? That it has a hole by the heart? What does it mean? Kosher karua keneged alev. First of all, it means that there's a hole specifically where the heart was, as opposed to any place else on the bottom of the animal. And number two, the kodur kamin aruba. Number two, it's cut like a skylight. It's cut like a round hole, as opposed to some other shape. Then we still have to figure, okay, but there is also the possibility it might have also happened after the animal was shechted. They might have cut out a hole in it. How do we tell? Yesh olav kod dam osur. So it looks like this. If there's a crust of blood on it, then it is osur, because then it obviously was done while the animal was still alive. They cut it and ripped out the heart. Einol of kod dam mutter. If there's no kod dam, But then it means unless you have reason to think otherwise, that it means that it was done afterwards. It wasn't done l'shem avodas kachavim. It happened after the animal was skinned. Okay, Amar Rav Huna. So Rav Huna says, similar to what you said about getting washed, loyshanu elashalim molchay. Now that only applies if the skin wasn't salted to turn it into leather. Our molchay also, but if it was salted, then it would be also ema milchay hevavchay, because the salt will have removed the blood as it does when you kasher meat. So therefore, it's okay.
How would you know?
You can tell whether a skin is raw or whether it's been salted. So once it's been salted, then you can't accept, then you find a round hole where the heart was, then you have to say it's also misafik, because it might have been used for avodah zarah and you don't see blood on it because it is. Yeah. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rav Shimon Gamliel, Bizman Shah Kedah Shalai Ogul Osir. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it depends on the shape of the hole. If the hole is round, then it's osir. Moshruch mutter, but if the hole is long, then it's mutter, because then it must have just been an accident or something that happened or whatever. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rav Shimon Gamliel. Yes, the halacha is like him.
So round, no,
but if it's long, then yes. Yeah. Amar Le'abaya, halacha, the Tosfos points out, by the way, in a few places in Chas, it mentions a rule that Rav Yochanan says, that in general, wherever Rav Shimon Gamliel says, a din in our Mishnah, the halacha is like him, except in three cases. The fact that these three Amiroyim had to say not shows that they don't hold of that general rule. Therefore, they have to specifically say the halacha is like him. Okay. So if you're saying the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel, does that imply the Chachamim in the Mishnah disagree with him? So Rav Yosef says, "My nachta lachmina." So what's the difference? Either way, the halacha is like him. What do you care? So Abaya says, like the expression Gemara, should it be like you'll learn the Gemara and it'll be like a song, like whether you understand the words or not? Either way, you're singing, you're making some nice music. No, if you're going to learn Gemara, you should be understanding. If there's not a machlok, there's no reason to say whether the halacha is like them or not. But that's the difference. You shouldn't just be learning and saying the words. You should be understanding. So I want to understand. We want to understand. If you're going to say the halacha is like him, does it mean there is an argument, but nevertheless, this is one of the exceptions where you pass him like a das yachid? Or is it that there's no machlokas in the first place? And therefore, we're clarifying, you should be aware there's no machlokas. And in fact, Rishonim, since the Gemara doesn't make it clear, the Rishonim argue on that exact point. What did Rav Yosef and Rav Yehuda and Shmuel hold? Did they hold those machlokas or not? The Gemara doesn't make it clear.
Okay. I don't think it seems to be a machlokas.
It could be. Okay. All right. Then we said in the Mishnah, Basra Nichnas L'Avodas Kachavim Mutter. We said that meat that's brought into a place of Avodah Zarah is still Mutter, because as long as a Jew takes it out of there before it was offered, because then, fine, it's Trei for meat, but it still is Mutter Bahana. It wasn't yet used as an offering. As opposed to once it was brought in there, then it's also Bahana. So we're going to ask Man Tana. Which Tana is it that says this?
That should be
Mutter before they brought it, before they brought it in. And by the way, I mean, in the Mishnah, it actually said that this is Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So if we say that, it means according to which of his Rebbeim was Rabbi Akiva saying. You have Rishonim that aren't Gurus Rabbi Akiva there, in which case, the Gemara is asking flat out, which Tana is it like?
So enough to say this from Rabbi Akiva?
We want to know where Rabbi Akiva got it from, because we have a Machloikas that's relevant in this connection. Amr of Chiva Abba Amr of Yechon, and Deloikir of Elazar, Rabbi Yezer really is supposed to be. Whoever it is like, we should know that it's not according to Rabbi Eliezer. Now we know Rabbi Akiva's main two Rabbeim were Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Given that we find an opinion of Rabbi Eliezer who says something that we're going to say in a second that bears on this, which contradicts what we're saying in our Mishnah, obviously this opinion of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah cannot represent the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. It has to be according to Rabbi Yeshua, according to one of his other Rabbeim. The Iker of Elazar, the Iker of Eliezer, because if you're going to say that our Mishnah is like Rabbi Eliezer, it wouldn't work. Because Rabbi Eliezer says in a different context that when he says in connection with the question is like this. One second. The question is like this. In Cholin, the Gemara talks about, if a goy shechts an animal, we know it's nevela. We know it can't be kosher to meat. The question is it mutter b'hanah? Rabbi Eliezer there says, no, stam machsheves over kechavim lavet is kechavim. The stam, when a goy is thinking, when a goy is shechting, by default, he's thinking of Avodah Zarah. Therefore, he's shechting it in honor of his Avodah Zarah. Therefore, it's the kriv of Avodah Zarah. It becomes awesome. As opposed to the Chachamim disagree. They just say it's Nevela. Now, our Mishnah... You can have an off from it. You just can't eat it. Right. So now, if our Mishnah is saying that that when the meat is being brought in, it's still Mutar B'Hanah, only when it's being brought out, where it was already used as an offering to Avodah Zarah, it's Mutar B'Hanah, Rabbi Eliezer would hold that even when it's being brought in. Now, Tosfos asked the question, what about, for example, we know already the Mishnah... Well, the question is, Tosfos says it's not so simple. What about...
I totally lost it.
Okay, sorry.
Can you start over again?
Yeah, we were saying... Okay, Rabbi Eliezer... Okay. Rabbi Eliezer would say that when a goy shechts an animal, he automatically has in mind Avodah Zarah. Therefore, any animal shechted by a goy is automatically tekrovus avodas kechavim and his offspring. Our Mishnah is making a distinction, on the other hand, between meat that a goy brings into his base Avodah Zarah and meat that he's taking out of it. Where before it's Mutar B'Hanah and afterwards it's Osir. So we're saying Rabbi Eliezer would not agree to that. Rabbi Eliezer would say either way it's Osir. Because as soon as he checked it and he had in mind, Avodah Zarah.
Oh, okay. I'm still a little bit lost.
What's okay? What are you still missing?
Okay. So the klal we're trying to bring out is that any time a goy does anything, you assume that he's thinking about Avodah Zarah.
That's what Rabbi Eliezer holds, yes.
That's Rabbi Eliezer. And who's the other one?
The other Chacham. The other Chacham.
Maybe not.
That maybe not.
So therefore, if he shech something,
maybe no.
Well, whatever. That's not. Right. That Mestama he's not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Mestama not.
Yeah. Right.
So if he shech something, then?
So if he shech something, the Chachamim will say it's Mutar B'Hanah. It's just also to eat. It's Neveva.
Okay.
Rabbi Eliezer will hold also B'Hanah. It's Dibchei Mason. It's
the
Kerev of Tavar Dazar. Now, Tosfos says, in that we know already the Mishnah is not like Rabbi Eliezer. The Mishnah just talked about, for example, these Oris Levorim, these skins that have a hole cut out by the heart. We're saying they're Mutar B'Hanah. The Oris Levorim are also B'Hanah. But any other kind of skin from going would be Mutar B'Hanah. According to Rabbi Eliezer, they would also be also B'Hanah. Yeah. The answer is, Tosfos distinguishes because there's a difference. Rabbi Eliezer is talking about his din when the guy shechts the animal. He takes a knife and cuts its neck, as opposed to, for example, ripping out the heart or killing it in other ways. Not necessarily does he do that in honor of Avodah Zarah. To shecht it, the way they would shecht a korban to Avodah Zarah was a knife to the neck. That's what that's
hunting very, very hard to swallow.
So that's what it says, for example.
Because
if he's doing it der chanika unchira, if he does it, for example, by strangling the animal, stabbing it or whatever, that's not a normal way of shechting it for Avodah Zarah. Therefore, even Rabbi Eliezer is not going to hold that they're doing it l'shem Avodah Zarah. So therefore, we're over here, we're talking about, though, when you bring in meat to Avodah Zarah, to a place of Avodah Zarah, usually it's going to be from meat that was already shechted, and now it wasn't just killed stamazo, it was slaughtered in a way that you're going to use it for, that you're going to use it for food. And therefore, according to Rabbi Eliezer, it would be Avodah Zarah, and according to it,
When you say shechted,
doesn't mean with all the...
shechted, it was... stabbing it in the heart.
Not always. Sometimes shechita would actually be, they'd do similar to what we do. They'd cut its neck. They wouldn't follow all the dinim, of course, but they would still, they'd cut its neck. Rather than,
I guess so,
yeah.
Otherwise, they would just pull the heart out.
And that would be for Avodah Zarah also, right. Yeah. But if they stabbed it, for example, it's not necessarily, even Rabbi Eliezer would say it's not for Avodah Zarah.
That's according to Rashi.
Doesn't mention that, but Tosfos allows it.
Is that accepted by the...
As far as I know. I mean, the fact is the halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer anyway. The halacha is...
Rishonim,
I don't think. I don't know if they say one way or the other.
They'll discuss that.
Okay. Onward. Then we said in the mission of HaYotze Osir Mepneshu to Zivchei Mesim, we said meat that's being brought out of the place of the Avodah Zarah is Osir because it's like Zivchei Mesim, it's like Karbonis to the dead Yetchkes. And by the way, the Yerushalmi elaborates on that a little bit. The Yerushalmi says, specifically, we're talking about, like you had in those days, you have like Lahavdil in the Arbe Mikdash, you have the Kodesh, and you have the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Lahavdil in their temple, they had something similar. They had like an inner chamber where the Getchke itself is, and then you had the outer rooms over there. So the Yerushalmi says that here we're talking about where it was brought into the inner chamber. The Bavli doesn't mention that, which leads to Rishonim to say maybe the Bavli doesn't agree with that, with that distinction.
Oh.
Okay. Anyway. So my timer, so why is that? Because once it's brought out, yep, like a tekrivus of it is common. Inevitably, it was already brought as an offering to the Getchke, and therefore it's also Bana. So the question is, Mani, which Tana is this part of the Braisa like that says that calls it Zivchei Mesim? That would be Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseri. That would be specifically according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseri. We talked about earlier the question of Avodah Zarah and to Kroivus Avodah Zarah and Meshamshe Avodah Zarah, to what degree are they Metame? You have an opinion that they're Metame, they have the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseira, that they're Metame like a mess, Maga, Mas, whether you touch it, whether you carry it, whether you're under the same oil as it. And then you have different other opinions. You have Rabbi Akiva in a Mishnah in Shabbos, who says that Avodah Zarah is Metame like a Nida. We're going to discuss it later on in Al Masechta as well. And you have a Chachamim who say it's Metame like a Sheret. Tikroivus, in a way, is more stringent than the Avodah Zarah itself, according to the Chachamim. Tikroivus is Metame b'masa also, is Metame by carrying it as well. The Avodah Zarah itself only b'maga, only by touching it. But Tikroivus is more stringent, it's also Metame b'masa. But when our Mishnah calls it Zivche Mesim, Korbanos of the Dead, that would be specifically according to the Behuda ben Maaseira, who holds it like the dead. That's Metame to the same degree as a man.
So it is the only one who thinks that the
that's a different machloket.
Mashava is, and here we're talking about.
Here we're talking about something else. Here we're talking about once he brought it in, once he used it as tekrovis. Before Rabbi Eliezer was talking about when he shechted it, was it tekrovis or not? Here we're talking about once it's definitely tekrovis. It was brought into the Avodah Zarah house over there, and therefore there's no question now it's tekrovis. To what degree is it metame? Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseira is the one who says metame like a mess. The Tanya, as we learn in Brisa, Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseira, I mean, nine that tekrovis Avodah Zarah comes from metame oil. How do we know that something offered to Avodah Zarah, food or whatever, is metame even when you're under the same roof as it, like a mess? Shenema, as the pasuk says, "Vayitzamdu l'Baal Pa'ur v'yirchu zivchemes," and the pasuk says they were attached to Baal Pa'ur, the Jewish people over there in the Midbar, and they ate the sacrifices of the dead. So calling it dead means ma mes metame ba'oil, just as a dead body is metame ba'oil.
He says that
you have the tekish. After Kerevah Sabbat, metame ba'oil, therefore also something offered to Avodah Zarah also becomes metame ba'oil, and Rashi says, therefore you also have that it's also b'hanah. So the other Chachamim agree that it's also b'hanah. They just told us we don't use the hekesh to say that it's metame like a mess. They'll say that it's metame like a sheret or like a nevela or whatever, like a nevela rather, that it's metame b'masa as well.
Well, it's metame b'mes. When a person is tumah mes, then he's an avatuma?
He himself becomes an avatuma, right? He can be metame alter mekalin, right?
Okay, so now when a person is metame and we compare that, is he also an avatuma or is he rishon tumah?
According to Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseira, he might well be an avatoma. Actually, I don't know. I mean, again, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is that the Avodah Zarah itself is only metame like a sheret, only if you touch it. And therefore you only be a rishon after touching it. The tekrovis is a little more stringent. It's like a nevela, but also you only become a rishon the trauma after touching it. Yeah.
Nothing more than a rishon.
Right. Then we said in the Mishnah, how hurkul the tarpus, when you have goyim who are going to tarpus, which is a place of
Avodah. Going to the mikveh.
Huh. Yeah. All you need is a mikveh and Herif Shemesh, yeah.
According to
Rabbi Yehuda ben Maaseira, you need more than that. I don't think according to him you need sprinkling with pot adumah water. I don't think he takes it that far, but yeah. All right. We said how hurkul the tarpus, people who are going to tarpus, and we learned in the Mishnah, Tarpus is the place of Avodah Zarah. Tosfos mentions over here that Tarpus comes from a word that means dirty and disgusting.
Otherwise, it means a place where...
It means a place of Avodah Zarah, but we're calling it Mokam Tinoifus. Yeah, it means a place, we're calling it, in a derogatory term, we're calling it Mokam Tinoifus, a disgusting place. Tosfos also mentions the Yerushalmi relates it to the word Trofim, like the famous Trofim that we have in a few places in Tanakh. Yeah, okay. Rochel, rather, you mean, yeah.
Rochel.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so people who are going to Tarpus, we said in the Mishnah, Asurin Loseis Veloseis Imahen, you're not allowed to do business with them. So Omar Shmuel, so Shmuel says it depends.
Even Yidden?
Well, that's what we have to figure out. Ovid Kechavim Aholich of Tarpus, if it's a Goy who's going over there, then Bahalicha Osir, when he's on his way there, it's also to do business with him. The Ozol Moidi Kami Avodis Kechavim, because as we said in the first parak, we're concerned that he is going to go and thank his Getchka for the good business. Bahazora Mutter, but if he's on his way back, he's Mutter. You're Mutter to do business with him because my Dehaba Haba, because what happened happened already. He's not going to turn around. He's not going to turn around. There you get into the question whether Islam is Avodah Zarah. We've talked a number of times. According to the vast majority of the Rishonim, it's not Avodah Zarah. That's different. So you have the Ran holds, but he's a Daf Yochanan. But no, so the question would more be about Christians going to their worship. Are Christians considered Avodah Zarah? That's much more controversial among the Rishonim. Okay, so anyway, so when they're on their way there, they're on a pilgrimage to there, then you're not allowed to, but when they're on their way back, then it's fine. On the other hand, Yisrael ha'holchos ha'ifrus. What about if you have a Jew going to such a place? V'halicha mutter. Then if he's on it, then it's just the opposite. When he's on his way there, you're allowed to do business with him. Dilma hoder be'v'loy ozel, because he may change his mind and decide not to go after all. V'chazora oser. But when he's on his way back, he's oser. Then you're also to do business with him. Piven de'avik be'y, because once a Jew has gotten into Avodah Zarah, he becomes very much attached to it. Mehader hoder ozel, and therefore he may well be so into it that he's going to turn around and thank it, and therefore that would be awesome.
And go back and thank it,
yeah.
Doesn't it say somewhere that the man's supposed to be bound, in other words, the hoder zarah, even by much trouble?
Fine, so that's right. But the point is, here we're worried about that he's going to actually go, that the result of it is he's going to be thanking the Getchka for helping him, for making him do good business. We're not worried about what's going to happen in his machshava. We're worried about his maisa, that he's going to actually go there and thank, and we don't want that. Fine, okay, but he's had machshavas already. Okay, the Eivishter will deal with his machshavas. But right now, we're dealing with, are you allowed to do business with him? So we're saying a Jew is not normally going to get into Avodah Zarah. He may, at the last moment, change his mind, and what am I doing getting into this? And he'll turn around and go home. So when he's on his way back already, he already went there, and now he's on his way back,
yeah,
then you wouldn't be allowed.
You're never allowed?
Right? Well, that's what we're saying. Right. So that's what we're saying. Okay. So the question is, v'hotanya, but we learn in another braisa, Yisrael ha'holcho tarpus bein b'halicha bein b'chazara. So we have another braisa that says that when a Jew is going to a tarpus, whether he's on his way there or whether on his way back, it's also to do business with him. So what is it? Are you allowed to do business with him on the way there or not? The answer is, Omer Avashi, hitanya hi b'Yisrael mumer. That second braisa is talking about Yisrael mumer. Where he's a meshumah, he already converted, he's already addicted, he's already a regular thing by him that he goes to, he worships Avodah Zarah. The Badai also, then we know for sure when he's on his way there, he's for sure going to go. We don't expect that
he mumah 2 times, 3 times that he does.
That he has he's made a habitual thing of it. I don't know how long, but whatever it is, the point is that he does it regularly, and therefore, so now we know already when he's going there, he's not going to all of a sudden have a change of heart.
Make
and
a difference between the first time and.
Because the first time, it's unusual for a person, it's unusual that a Yid should go for Avodah Zarah, but once he's already started doing it,
he went.
He's on his way. He didn't actually go there yet. He's on his way. Halfway with it.
I'm saying,
okay,
if he did it once, he's not considered a mumah. If he does it regularly.
So fine, you have to ask how many times you have to do it to be considered a mumer. The point is that a mumer in general, in shas, a mumer means somebody who acts as if this mitzvah no longer exists. And it doesn't have to be a mumer as far as Avodah Zarah, whatever. You have a mumer as far as Nevelos, you have a mumer as far as there are many different Isurim. That the just he acts as though this mitzvah and the Torah no longer exist as far as he's concerned. So then you have no reason to think that he's going to change his mind. Therefore, you'd be also to do with him business on the way there and back. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa. So Ovid Kachav Maholich Yerid. So now if you have a guy going to a Yerid, so in later times they use the word Yerid more generally, it meant a fair. An affair is not necessarily, I mean, it would just be people would be gathering to buy and sell. Here, Rashi learns over here specifically that it's a yirid of Avodah Zarah. It's a yirid of Avodah Zarah. So a goy may be going there for general business. But it's primarily a place where they're buying and selling Avodah Zarah stuff. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta discusses this and says that the situation over here is we're talking about, we learned over there, we had a mission over there, we had a Gemara over there about stores that are decorated in honor of a Zara or not, when you have a Goyish holiday going on, that you have stores that are decorated where the deal is therefore that the decorations indicate that they're going to be giving a certain percentage of their profit through the Avodah Zarah. Versus where they're not decorated, they're not. Here, Tosfos learns that we're talking about that kind of yirid, where it's not a question what they're buying and selling over there, but that a certain percentage of the proceeds from it are going to be going to Avodah Zarah.
And therefore,
you have an issue with that. So yeah, you have a goy going to
Christmas tree in a store today.
That's not necessarily the same as Mu Torah. First of all, we talked there what Mu Torah meant, what exactly they're decorated with. But second of all, also what we talked about over there, we had in the Gemara over there on your days, we had a discussion of what exactly they're decorated with that makes them Mu Torah. But besides that, also, again, when a store nowadays has an Xmas tree, it doesn't necessarily mean they're giving a certain percentage of their profit to the local church. So therefore, that's
it. It could mean.
It could, but it doesn't necessarily.
What did we speak on
your
base?
Well, yeah, you had on your base, Jim. We had Hanuyas Mutotis, Kishani Mutotis. We talked about whether whatever we say over there, they're decorated with roses and hadassim, where you have a hana from the smell, but if they're decorated with fruit, then maybe it's mutter because then you don't have any hana. Then we said that even if it's mutter with fruit, then it's also also because you're giving benefit to the Avodah Zarah. So then we talked about what exactly it's decorated with, but the main point is the decorations are not just showing that he's celebrating the holiday. It shows that he's pledging a certain percentage of it to Avodah Zarah, as opposed to nowadays they don't necessarily do that. Okay, fine. So you have so turn it up on over to Chol Maholich LeYurid when a goy is going to this Yurid to this fair. Ben b'halicha ben b'chazorah mutter, whether he's on his way there or on his way back, it's mutter to do business with him. Yisrael ha'holach b'yirid. On the other hand, if a Jew is going to such a yirid, b'halicha mutter b'chazorah also. When the Jew is on his way there, it's mutter. When he's on his way back, it's also. So the question is, which is similar to the thing where they're going to Tarifus. So the question is, ma'ishna Yisrael the b'chazorah also. So why would it be a Yisrael when he's on his way back is also? The Amri, we may figure that what happened is Avodah Shechavim Zabin. What may have happened is that he may have sold a getchka of his. He may have sold an idol of his at this period. Therefore, Dmei Avodah Shechavim Ikabade. And now you have a problem. This Jew is carrying with him money that came from the sale of Avodah Zarah, from the proceeds of Avodah Zarah. Well, by that logic, also, then why is it mutter with a goy? Avodah Shechavim Nami name Avodah Shechavim Zabin Dmei Avodah Shechavim Ikabade. Wouldn't the same issue apply to a goy as well? And by the way, the truth is, Not necessarily is money that came from Avodah Zarah in and of itself also. If a goy sells an Avodah Zarah, if a goy gives you money, you don't have to ask him specifically where the money came from. But Rishonim points out here it's a little bit different because the money that you have, he went to a Yurid, he sold an Avodah Zarah over there. The whole Yurid itself is an honor of Avodah Zarah, and he bring back money over there. There you have much more of an issue with it. As opposed to if he were to just at random one day take a statue of his and sell it and give you money, you don't have to start asking where that money came from. So what's the difference between a Jew and a goy in that regard? The answer is Ella Ovid Kachovim Amrin Glima Zabin Chamra Zabin. Fine, because with a goy, we're going to say not necessarily did he sell an idol. He may have sold a garment. He may have sold a donkey. Well, by that logic, you could ask also Yisrael Nami Aim a Glima Zabin Chamra Zabin. New, by the same logic, a Jew could have also sold other things. Why are you suspecting that he got the sold of a desarta such that you're saying you're also to do business with him? So the answer is he is said to have a lay because if a Jew had other things to sell, he wouldn't bother schlepping all the way over there. He would just sell it here locally to his fellow Jews. They could just as well buy a glimmer or a chamra from him. Why is he going? Why is he schlepping all the way over to the Yerid, which after all cuts into his profits when you get down to it? It must be because he has something that he knows he can't sell locally because he doesn't want Jews to know that he's selling Avodah Zarah. Therefore, you have an issue. So he goes far away where he figures nobody knows. As opposed to a goy has no particular reason that he should be selling his garments or his donkeys or whatever locally over here. He might as well go to the Yerid where all his fellow goyim are and socialize with them or whatever. And yeah, they're also buying and selling Avodah Zarah. So what? He has no problem with that. And there's also plenty of goyish customers he'll find there as well. So therefore, he's not worried so much about it eating into his profits. As opposed to a Yid, he has no reason to go there unless he's selling something contraband, and therefore we have more reason to think that he is doing that, and therefore it should be also to do business with him on the way back. So again, Tosfos before mentioned that there's a difference over here that here we're talking about this Yurid. Basically what you have over here, Tosfos says, is that the rule is if your stall is decorated, then fine, you're decorated and you're going to be giving us a certain amount of your profit. If not, then you have to pay tax. Then you have to pay us a tax for having a stall over there. So what's a Jew going and doing business over there unless he's involved with Avodah Zarah? Then we said in the mission of Haboyin Mutorin, we said when Goyim are on their way back from the Tarifus, then you're allowed to do business with them. So we said they're not going to turn around and go back. However, Amar of Shimon Lakish, Lo Yishonu Aleishen Kshurin Zebazeh. That only applies if they're not in a group together. Av Kshurin Zebazeh, but if you have a group of Goyim coming back from the Tarifus, then Asurin. Then it's also to do business with them, Ema Daita Lachsa, because we have to be concerned. They may decide, you know what, there's a bunch of us anyway, why don't we, I just did a good business deal, and we're a group, we can more easily travel together, let's do that, let's go back there and thanks the Getchka. And we can't do that. Then we said in the Mishnah, no desa over to Chavim Makan Kanehem. Then we said in the Mishnah, going back to Yayin Netzach, and we said that noyot, again, these skin bags of goyim that they use for their wine, and kankanehem, their barrels. So we said we had a machloikus in the Mishnah between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, whether those things are also bahana or not. We said you had noyot over Chavim kankanehem with Jewish wine in them. They're also, and they're also bahana, says Rav Meir. The Chachamim said they're not also bahana. So again, according to Rashi, the question is really on the kankanim themselves, whether they're also or mutter. According to Tosfos before on the previous daf, the question is more about the wine inside them, whether it's also or mutter. Okay. Tanan Rabbanan, notice the Ode Kachavim, when you have skin bags that belong to goyim, grudim chadoshim mutarim, if they are grudim, now, the thing is, normally these kinds of containers, whether they're made out of skin or whether they're made out of earthenware, they would usually coat them on the inside with tar. And the tar would accomplish, it would make that the wine is less likely to leak out. It would also give a certain taste to the wine. Not necessarily a good taste, as we'll see later in the Gemara, but nevertheless. But also, on the other hand, it makes that therefore they also absorb more of the wine than they otherwise would. A smooth earthenware or leather container is going to absorb a certain amount, but not that much. Once you have tar over there, it'll absorb much more. So here you have notice of Ode
Kachavim.
They're covered with tar on the inside, yeah. So notice of Ode Kachavim, grudim chadoshim mutarin, if they are grudim, if they are, so Rashi explains grudim means that they are not tarred, so they don't have any tar on, they don't have any tar on them, and they're chadoshim, and they're new, mutarin, then you're allowed to use them. The Rashi learns, because what it is if they don't have tar, then if they don't have tar, Rashi learns that new doesn't necessarily mean they've never been used before. If they've never been used before, there's not that much of a chiddush in it. The point is, rather, Rashi says, new can mean they were used for goyish of wine at some point, but little enough time that not much, that wine won't have absorbed it. The leather won't have absorbed the wine. That's what we discussed before. Rav Gamliel drinking from such a container. That's the idea, because it didn't absorb. As opposed to, so Rashi goes on to say that's true only of noyot. Not necessarily, it wouldn't be true of earthenware. Earthenware will absorb right away. That's why the Mishnah discussed kankanim. But noyot is different. Tosfos has a bunch of questions on Rashi for a lot of different reasons, as part of some of them having to do with things that we'll see later on in the sugya. Tosfos discusses, among other things, just a linguistic question. Grudim usually implies that it's been scraped, implying that they had tar on them and then it was scraped off, not that it never had tar in the first place. So Tosfos discusses the ins and outs. Are we talking about that there was tar and it was scraped off? Are we talking about that there never was tar on them, like Rashi says? You would see the difference. The Binyan Shloimer, the Binyan Shloimer of Nassim Maz, my house based in Frankfurt, who I mentioned before, my distant relative, has a vote on it. He says maybe grudim means that there's no tar on them, but just that what they would do is they'd sand down like the inside of the container so that when they apply the tar, it'll stick much better. Not sand really, but like they'd grind it, like they'd grind along the clean, yeah, like they'd roughen it up, so they'd roughen it up kind of, so that when they put on the tar, it'll stick better. Anyway, Tosfos discusses a number of different opinions about the Gemara over here. They bring a different girsa over here, maybe about what's going on over here, what's mutter and what's not. Anyway, let's go on primarily according to Rashi. Yeshanim umzupafin asurin. But if they're old, meaning that they've been used for a long time for yayin netzach, or if they are coated with tar and have been used even the one time, then they're asurin. What about ovid kachavim ribavon? What about if the goy applied the tar to them? Ribavon, Rashi and Tosfos both mention that ribavon comes from a word that means revav, means grease. So literally it means he greased them. But that's what tar is. It's a greasy, sticky stuff. So if the guy applied the tar, the ibdon, and he worked on them, he applied it in properly, the nosam v'seichan yai, and he poured wine into the container, the yisroel omen of gabba, while a Jew was watching him, ain't choshesh, then you don't have a problem. Then you don't have a problem. Now Rashi learns on the basis of the Gemara later on that what we mean is a guy poured in wine. Rashi understands it as part of the process of applying the tar while the tar was still hot, they would pour in wine over there, and that way it takes away some of the bitterness, some of the off taste of the tar. And that way it gets absorbed into that wine that you pour in at the beginning. Again, Tosfos, the long Tosfos over here, discusses various possibilities on that, including that it may mean actually we're talking about the goy is pouring in wine under the supervision of a Jew, but what we mean is under the supervision to make sure that he doesn't touch the actual wine itself. Here, where he's touching the actual container, normally we say when a goy pours wine from a container, that already becomes a problem. Here we're talking about that as long as he doesn't touch the actual wine, then it wouldn't be an issue. Fine, so that's the braisa. The question is, if a goy is pouring wine into it, ki yisrael omer agava my habi, then what does it help? If a Jew is watching him, if the goy is pouring the wine, amar papa hachur kama. So papa says what it means is over kuchavim ribavon v'ibdan v'yisrael noisim sechen yayin. What it means is like this: the goy applied the tar, a yid pours wine into the barrel. Then you have another yid watching the first one, and therefore you don't have a problem. The question is, why do you need that? If you have one Jew pouring in the wine, so the guy's not handling it, what do you need? A second Jew watching him. The answer is Dilma Agav Tirde Menastech Valavadaita. Yes, the first Jew, because he's busy pouring in the wine, what might happen is while he's busy making sure that he's busy, again, he's pouring in the wine. Again, Rashi learns he's not pouring it into keep in there. He's pouring in wine in order to cool off and in order to absorb the taste of the tar. So therefore, while he's busy with that, the goy may touch it and do nisuch and he won't notice. Therefore, you need a second Jew.
He's pouring the wine.
What do you mean? He's pouring the wine, like to make sure that it touches everywhere on the tar, to make sure that it absorbs the taste properly.
The rest of the wine.
So meanwhile, he's pouring from a container of wine carefully in there in different places to make sure that it absorbs the off taste from the tar. Meanwhile, the guy may come over and touch it, and then the Jew's not noticing because he's too busy. It's one thing when you're pouring normally into a barrel, fine. You can see. You don't necessarily have to stand right over it. But when you're doing little by little over here, meanwhile the guy may come behind you or whatever and touch it. And you won't realize. So that's why you need
a big.
Obviously, the situation was that we're talking about that the Jew is absorbed in his work. It's an absorbing thing to make sure that you're treating the tar properly, and therefore you may not notice the guy touching. Okay, that's one answer. Rav Zvid amar lo olam kedekahamet meikra. Rav Zvid says, never mind that. You don't have to change the braisa and saying that you're talking about one goy who applied the tar and then two Jews, one to apply the wine and one to watch. You can go back to the original thing that we're talking about a goy applied the tar and a goy is also applying the wine to the tar. So what is it? V'hacha, the idna, so why is it that it's mutter? Why is it that it's mutter, but why is it that you need a Jew watching him? The idna, the kashadi leinaske zorek mayim latit, because this guy who's pouring the wine in there, that wine is going to be lost. It's going to be absorbed into the tar, and its taste is going to be bottled. It's going to be like as if you're pouring water into clay. And once the clay dries, it's like the water is gone. The same thing over here. Once the tar cools off and dries off, the wine is effectively gone. You're not worried that it's going to be perilous. It's not going to go out. The wine is not going to go out for there from the tar.
Talking about hot tar?
Yes, you put on hot tar. After you put on the hot tar, you pour wine onto it to help absorb some of the off taste from the tar. But that wine itself is going to cool the tar, but it's also going to be absorbed so much into the tar that you're not worried that it's going to be perilous, that it's going to come out afterwards into the wine that's stored in it. So you don't have an issue of nisuch with the wine that the goy himself is pouring into the tar. The only problem is that you have to have somebody watching him to make sure that after he's finished pouring the amount of wine that's going to be absorbed into the tar, that he's not pouring more wine after that. It's going to become actual yayin nesek. Again, one of Tosis's problems with Rashi's explanation and another Rishonim is the Gemara didn't say anything about watching him during it versus after it. The implication is you need to be watching him during the process. So therefore, again, Tosis learns that we're talking about, no, after the tar is applied, you have eventually wine is being poured into a container to store over there. There you have an issue over there again, since it is Jewish wine and the whole thing is being done under supervision of Jews. Therefore, we don't have such a problem of that. Therefore, you don't have such a problem of chasnus or whatever. Therefore, you don't have an issue of nisuch either. So therefore, you have to have a Jew watching it to make sure no nisuch is actually done.
How would you know?
You would make sure you'd notice that you'd notice that the goy. You'd make sure that the goy is not saying anything or whatever. That
just
that
mumble
it,
something.
Yeah, you would pay attention. You'd pay attention to make sure that he doesn't. So that would be that. Okay. Amar Rav Papi. So Rav Papi says Shmamino Midrav Zvid. Well, based on this, that Rav Zvid is saying, that was saying that you have you're pouring wine in there to cool off and absorb the taste of the tar. And based on that, we're saying it's mutter, and we don't have a problem with that bit of wine that the goy is pouring in. Based on that, by the same logic, if a goy were to take wine and pour it into a container of salt that belongs to a Jew, we're the same thing. The salt absorbs the wine, and it's never really going to come out of there afterwards. Also, shori, it would also be mutter by the same logic. However, no, well, maskus Ravashi, well, on the face of it, Rav Papi is saying it should be mutter. However, maskus Ravashi asks on that, midomi, how do you compare that? There the wine is actually completely getting lost and destroyed. It goes into the tar. No, in the case of the tar, it goes into the tar. It's never coming out of the tar, and the tar itself, it doesn't have, you know, the tar itself is not a taste that you want to taste in the wine. I mean, inevitably, it's going to give a little bit of a taste, fine, but it's not, the wine itself is basically going and then being lost in there. Here it's not getting lost. The fact of the matter is the salt has now absorbed the taste of the wine. Okay, it's not going to come out of there again, but it still absorbed it. You still have, when you use that salt, it's going to have that taste of wine. So how can it be mutter? You can't compare them. Now, Tosfos asked the obvious question, then what was Rav Papi thinking? Didn't he realize that distinction? So therefore, Tosfos says, no, not like Rashi, that bay milchi means a container of salt. Of course, Rav Papi wouldn't say that's mutter. Bay milchi means a place where salt is manufactured. So therefore, the argument is, Rav Papi is saying, the same way as the hot tar burns up the wine, and therefore you don't have a problem, the same way in a place where you're making salt, the same way the fire over there that you use to produce the salt, how do they make salt in those days? Usually they take water and evaporate it with a fire. So therefore, that'll also burn it up effectively. You won't have a taste of wine. However, Rav Ashi says that nevertheless, it still is not completely lost, because there you have, with skin bags, not only the tar itself, but also the fact the leather itself causes the wine to is mevatel the taste of the wine, as opposed to over here, you don't really have that. With that said, Tosfos says, nevertheless, we don't necessarily have to accept Rav Ashi's position. We can still say, fine, you can't prove it from Rav Zvid's point, but nevertheless, Rav Papi's din still would still be a din. And therefore, Tosfos says that when they, in those days, when they made salt, they sometimes, the goyim would sometimes, when they manufactured salt, during the process of boiling the salt, they would sometimes put blood in there to help make it whiter. I don't know how blood makes it whiter. I have no idea, but I guess some kind of chemical reaction.
Sure, because the only oxygenated that it's red,
yeah,
and that will be taken out.
Could be. I don't know. Whatever it is. I don't know exactly how the chemical reaction would work, but whatever it is, they did that. Now, on the face of it, therefore, salt from goyim should be also, it's got blood in it. Based on what Rav Papi is saying, though, no, it won't be a problem. Because Rav Papi is saying...
The difference between salt and tar.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. He's saying that once the taste is... Tosfos argues that the halacha is like Rav Papi. So again, not necessarily we're talking about that you poured it into the salt, like Rashi says. That wouldn't be mutter. But if you had it in the salt manufacturing plant, and as it's boiling, they put some blood on it in order to make it clearer. That would, such a thing would be allowed, says Tosfos. But it's not really going to be absorbed. It's not really going to be any kind of blood is trace.
What?
Yeah, but that's the thing.
Still be allowed.
It'd still be allowed. That's what Tosfos said. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Let's go a little further. Okay. So now we talked before about these containers that belong to goyim and are used for their wine. When are they mutter? When are they usser? So far again, Rashi made the distinction that if they're made out of leather, then even if they were used short term, they're still mutter, because they didn't really absorb very much. But if they were used for a longer time, or if they're coated with tar, then not. As opposed to earthenware is not. Earthenware would actually have to be, it was never used. Again, Tosfos disagrees with that and says that Tosfos brings different gersois and different explanations and all. That chadoshim, Tosfos mentions one explanation, that chadoshim would have to mean they were never actually used. Because they were never actually used, and they were never tarred, the point is, therefore, if the goy ever put wine in them, you would realize it. As opposed to, if they are tarred, you wouldn't necessarily realize whether there had ever been wine.
How would you realize it?
Because you could realize whether the color of it would be different now or whatever, but if there's tar on it, then you wouldn't
have... Oh, the soul changes color, anyway.
But apparently not. Apparently not enough. So therefore, so that's one of the explanations in the middle of the Tosfos over here mentioned from Rabbeinu Eliyahu, that if it's a noid, it's a skin bag, if it was never used, and it never had tar on it, so now you would know if you put wine in it, you would recognize the leather would change color or whatever. But if it ever had tar on it, even if the tar was taken off, that's what grudim can mean, that if it's taken off, then it would be also even if they're new, because at some point the goy may have put wine in them, and you wouldn't know. And then you wouldn't know, and therefore if they're yeshanim, if they were used even once, there was never any tar, then yeah.
Whether he put wine or not.
Right. So,
yeah.
Okay, so that's so only if it's new, only if you can tell that it was never used. That's Horn's one explanation in Tosfos. Okay, then again, Tosfos mentioned another girsa. Rabbi Hatam brings a girsa that if they're grudim, if there's no tar in them, then they're mutter even if they were again not. Rashi had said before that grudim meant that they had no tar on them ever. Grudim means smooth, according to one explanation in Tosfos, it means that the tar had been removed, right? But now Rabbeinu Tam says another explanation, and we can go back to Rashi, that grudim means that there was never any tar on them. However, the difference is, he has a different girsa, not grudim chadoshim mutarim, but grudim, if they're smooth of tar, then they're mutter, whether they were used or not. Because even if they were used, since it's not used lakium, they're not used for long-term storage, they're mutter in the sense, all you have to do is rinse them. And the same thing, even if they had tar and peeled off the tar, also it would be enough to rinse them. Only if they're yeshanim, they were used for long-term storage, then it would be osur, then they need actual pasturing, which is what the next gemara is.
The first thing you have to know is if it's yeshanim or if it's chadashim.
So you have to know whether it's yeshanim or chadashim, you have to know whether there's tar or not, right? So that's, you have these different explanations and these different yusoyos and tosfos, right? Okay, so let's talk briefly about the kashering process, and then we'll end. So first of all, Bar Adi Taya Onos Hahu Ziki Mirav Yitzchak Bar Yosef. Bar Adi, the Taya, the Arab merchant, one time stole some skin bags that are used for wine from Rav Yitzchak Bar Yosef. Rama Bahu Chamra, he put his own wine into these bags, and eventually he returned them. So maybe he didn't actually steal them. Maybe he just short-term borrowing, whatever it is. The problem is now it had wine of a goy in it. What do you do? Also, shol b'medrash. So Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef went to ask in the Medrash, what's the din as far as being able to use these? Amalei Rabbi Yirmiya, kachol Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi Yirmiya tells him, this is what Rabbi Ami paskin as follows. Halacha l'maisa. M'malan mayim shalish yomim u'ma'ara. What you have to do is you fill them with water for 3 days and pour them out. So what does that mean? V'omar rav atzorech la'aran mesle. And Rava said, that means you have to pour it out after every 24 hours. So what you do is you fill it up with water. And by the way, in Shulchan Aruch it mentions, you have to make sure, just like when we kasher dishes for Pesach, you have to make sure the top rim of it also gets kashered. The same way over here, you have to somehow make...
What?
If you kasher a pot for Pesach, for example, you have to make sure, not just the inside of the pot, but the rim also has to get kashered. How are you going to do it? If you fill it with water to the brim, fine, but as it boils, the water is going to boil away. It's not going to be full to the top. So either you put it inside a larger container, or if you don't have a larger container, another possibility is what you do is you make an extra rim around an extra temporary rim around the top of it, like out of clay or out of dough or whatever. And then when you put the water into it, you make sure that you for Pesach, for example, then you would obviously, but whatever, something that will hold the water in.
Any metal you can
you
can kosher it this way.
Yeah, so therefore
you give it to the guy who's kashering the thing.
Right.
So the same thing over here.
When we're talking about kashering a skin bag that's used for wine, you have to make sure the same thing. You're going to have to make sure the top end of it is somehow inside the water. Again, either put it inside a larger container or, again, make a new rim around it. Now, not boiled. Here, what we're saying is you fill it with water. You leave the water in there for 24 hours.
On
in the case of Pesach, you have to boil it until it reaches a boil.
The one
however long it takes to reach 212 degrees.
But how long does it stay when boiling?
As long as, once it's boiling, that's it.
It can stay a second boiling?
A second. I mean, practically speaking, you're not the actual phantom, and you're going to stop it as soon as the moment it reaches 212 degrees. You're not,
It does.
Yeah, practically speaking, it's going to be a minute or
two.
Yeah, whatever. What are you going to say?
Oh, you can go on.
Yeah. Okay, so the same thing over here. You have to make sure the top end. So you fill it with 24. If you fill it with water 24 hours, pour out the water, fill it again, wait another 24 hours, empty it, and do this 3 times. And by the way, it says in Shulchan Aruch for 3 days. Don't have to be consecutive.
And if you see something coming up?
Not if you see something. It's not a question whether you see something coming up. That will be enough. Again, because the wine that was in there was cold, and in this case, it was only short-term. That's, again, that gets into the whole discussion of Tosfos about short-term versus long-term storage. Therefore, that's enough to get out all the wine that was in there, or to make it at least that at this point it won't have a tam anymore, and therefore now you can use it.
Why can't you heat it? It would be easier to bring the wine out.
Because it's a skin bag. If you heat it, it's going to burn.
No, not necessarily. You put it in lukewarm water.
Lukewarm is not enough. If you're going to kasher it, you have to kasher it. We'll see about it later, actually, coming tomorrow. But anyway. Okay, so let's finish up then. Sovomina, now the Chachamim thought to say when they heard this din, Hani Milidi Dan. Fine, that applies to a case like Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, where the container was originally his, and then a goy took it from him and then returned it. Fine, for that you can use this so-called kashering using cold water or whatever. Avod Dituloi, but they thought to say, a container that was used the whole time for Yain Nesach, maybe that's not enough. He also, Ravin, Amar Rav Shimon Lakish, but when Ravin came, he said in the name of Rav Shimon Lakish, no, Echad Shalon over Echad Shalahem. Regardless whether it was ours or whether it was theirs, either way it's mutter. Again, according to Rashi, because a noid does not absorb so much as Udenware does, and according to Tosfos, because you have a difference between short-term versus long-term storage. A noid is not used for long-term storage.
Shimon Ben Lakish is the Reshma.
Is Reshma, yeah. Okay. However, still, Sovar of Acha Brederava Kameder of Ashi Lamemer. However, Rav Acha thought to say when he was learning in front of Rav Ashi that Hani Mili Noidos, that fine, that heter applies to Noidos, to skin bags, Avakar Kanim Loi, maybe it doesn't apply to barrels.
To what?
To this thing about Milui V'iri, about filling them with water and emptying them out. Amulet Rav Ashi, Loishna Noidos, Loishna Kankanim. No, it doesn't matter. Noidos or Kankanim, the same thing. You can the same thing because again, even though Urdhan, according to Rashi, Urdhanware absorbs more than skin. Nevertheless, the fact of the matter is they're not used for such long-term storage. And the fact of the matter is it's only cold. As that some of the Rishonim point out, that's the point. We have a usual rule when it comes to kashering, kiboilo kach polte. Whatever condition something absorbs something is how it gives it back out. So therefore, if it's cold, then all you need is cold. If it's hot, if it's boiling, if it's like directly over the fire, then you need directly over the fire.
Yeah. So how do you approach a metal pan?
So a metal pan. So the pan itself, the food that it contained, it was directly on the fire.
Yes.
Therefore, you need libun. As opposed to, for example,
put it on the fire.
You have to actually put it on the fire until sparks fly off it. That's blow torturing it, for example, as opposed to, for example, a pot that was used with liquid. You need hagala. You need to fill it with boiling water, and again, make sure the water goes over the rim of it,
if you take the pan and you put it directly on the fire?
That's the thing. I'm saying a pan is not used with liquid. A pan is used
directly.
What? Frying. What do you mean? Okay, I don't know. I think frying is still considered directly on the fire. I think so. I don't remember. But whatever it is, then yeah, so we need liquid then, yeah. All right. Okay, we'll stop over here.